obviously here in Montreal on July 1st, everyone was busy moving while the rest of the country was celebrating Canada Day. And so we're a bit behind on the Canada Day special that you put together and you published in Rabble on the changing structure of, kind of corporate Canada. So you took the Globe and Mail's report on business, looking at the top 1,000 publicly traded companies. Can you talk about the method you use? Because you only actually looked at 50 of those companies, as I understand.
Yeah, I zeroed in on the 50 biggest companies at the top of the list. They're obviously the most important companies. In fact, they accounted for 80% of the profits of the whole 1,000 companies on the Globe and Mail's list. 80% of them were accounted for by the 50 biggest ones. So you get a good picture of it. If you had more time, of course, you could do a more detailed study, including the sort of medium-sized companies that are further down the list.
And first, can you just explain what trends you saw in terms of profitability of Canadian companies?
Well, I was interested to note the 50 companies there together made $80 billion in profit. That's after-tax profit, I should emphasize, in 2010. So if you compare that number to the number from Statistics Canada in their reports on the overall Canadian economy, those 50 companies alone controlled about two-thirds of all profits generated in the entire country. So that's interesting that those 50 companies have that much clout, if you like. Their profits were up 40% in 2010 compared to 2009. Now, 2009 was a bad year, of course, because we'd had the financial crisis and the recession. But still, a 40% increase in profit is pretty strong. The most dramatic rise in profits was enjoyed by the resource-based companies, mining, oil companies, and so on that are on the list. Their profits went up 70% in 2010, and if you need to figure that one out, just go and fill up your car with gas.
And when you just talked about how there was a 40% jump from 2009, but how do these numbers compare over 10 years, over 25 years?
Well, as a share of profits in the Canadian economy, profits are actually pretty close to record highs. You know, you can measure profits in dollars, but it makes more sense to measure them as a share of total national GDP because, of course, you have inflation and economic growth and so on, which drives up the dollar figures. So pre-tax profits in Canada are about 16-17% of national GDP, and that's almost as high as they've ever been. The record year was 2008 for Canadian profits. What this reflects is over the last quarter century or so, our governments, virtually of any political stripe, have done all kinds of things to try and make Canada more business-friendly. You know, they've deregulated things, they've privatized former public enterprises, they've cut taxes, signed free trade agreements, and so on. And the impact of all of those measures is that profits have grown substantially as a share of our total economy.
So there's a few things I want to ask. The first thing is you just mentioned that it's been many different different types of governments that have promoted business growth. And obviously the last 4 years... Oh, it's getting loud there, right? The last 4 years, it's been Harper's conservative government that's been influencing policy. But what kind of changes do you see now that Harper's conservative government has a majority? And what do you expect over the next few years?
Well, even with a minority government, Harper did a lot to enhance the power and the profits of businesses and corporations. He cut corporate taxes and deregulated in a number of areas. He was pushing ahead with free trade agreements. But he was always constrained by the fact that, you know, he had to get his budget through Parliament. Now, with the majority, he's got a pretty blank check on which to write even more measures. So we've seen already a couple of things. One was how he intervened in the labor relations arena with the Air Canada strike and the Canada Post lockout. His government immediately intervened on the side of the employer to not just force an end to those strikes, but to do it in a way that supported the employer. That was unprecedented. Then we've now seen that he's come very close to signing a new free trade agreement with Europe, which will mean very strict controls on public procurement in Canada. It will also mean higher drug costs, because one of the European demands was more patent protection for European pharmaceutical makers. So that'll be another thing that he moves very quickly on. In general, I would expect under a Harper government, you'll see a more stridently pro-business agenda, probably than we've ever seen in our post-war history in Canada.
In April this year, you published a study, actually, looking back until 1961 that tracked Canadian business investment and cash flow and the impact of corporate tax cuts on the profitability of corporations. So your conclusion that you wrote about in that was that a three-point reduction in corporate tax would actually be less economically effective than, say, investments in public infrastructure. Can you talk a bit about that study in terms of Harper's agenda going forward? And also, if money is going into corporations, then where is it being taken out of in our economy?
Well, when we look at what the Harper government was doing to the corporate tax rate, they wanted to cut it from 18% to 15%, and they planned to do it in two stages. The first stage was this year, taking it to 16.5%, and then the second step would be next year, taking it down to 15%. And that reduction from 18 to 15 will cost the federal treasury about $6 billion a year in foregone revenue. We should keep in mind that those tax reductions are just kind of the latest in a long string of tax reductions going back to the turn of the century. It was Paul Martin, when he was finance minister, who first got the ball rolling. The tax rate for corporations used to be 29%. That is, for every dollar in profits, they had to pay 29 cents in tax to the federal government. That's not too different from the tax that an individual pays on their income. He cut it several times, and then the Harper government carried on with the reductions and from 21 to 18, and now Harper reduced it again from 18 to 15. So the $6 billion just comes out of basically the public purse. It means revenue that the government is not collecting, and moreover, that's at a time of deficit. So remember, every dollar that the government spends on a tax cut at this point when it's in deficit is another dollar that they have to borrow. So ultimately, all Canadians are paying for this tax cut because it's adding to Canada's debt. Now, the main claim that the Harper government and the business lobbyists make is they say, well, actually, there will be no cost to business tax cuts, because when you cut their tax, they'll invest more. And when they invest more, it creates more jobs and more GDP. Therefore, everyone's better off. That is the claim that was made in the election. So what I did in that study, I went back to 1961 and looked at the official Statistics Canada data on business profits, business investment, and tried to measure, is there any impact of tax rates on business investment decisions? And the evidence was very strong that there was no direct impact at all of tax cuts on business investment, that what's happening is companies are just basically taking the extra money they are allowed to keep because their tax rate has gone down, and they're putting it into short-term investments or paying it out in dividends to their shareholders or paying off debt that they companies themselves have. So the money is not translating into actual new business investment, and that's why I argued the government would be much better to take $6 billion and spend it directly on investment. You know, spend it on that new bridge that you need in Montreal. Spend it on other public infrastructure projects like that across the country. You get far bigger economic impact. You'd actually get a significant sort of spin-off benefit on private business investment, because the overall economy would be stronger. All of those ways, you end up with much more bang for the buck if the government just spent the money on investment itself rather than giving it out to corporations.
So in terms of money that's being cut from the budget as well, you just mentioned you're at the CBC. The CBC is facing 5% cuts. After a few years ago, I think there was close to 800 jobs being lost at the CBC. So it as well has been kind of trimmed back and slashed at all corners. What else do we see happening in the budget?
Well, the federal budget that came down right after the election, this is now the majority Harper government, they proposed several billion dollars of spending cuts. First of all, they, of course, are eliminating many of the temporary stimulus programs that the government had put in place during the recession, including temporary extension of employment insurance benefits for laid-off workers. Those benefits are all going to be cut. The extended benefits, they're phasing out of some of those public construction projects that were implemented during the recession. And then on top of that, they're going to impose several billion dollars worth of cuts to regular government operations. And so you're going to see it, the federal operations in Ottawa, and then anywhere else there are federal government offices, you're going to see layoffs and downsizing, as well as in some of the government agencies, things like Environmental Protection, International Development, CBC. These are all kind of, in a way, hobby horse issues for the Harper government and some of their MPs. You know, they've never been comfortable with the idea of a publicly owned broadcaster. You know, they'd rather see the media completely in the hands of, you know, folks like Conrad Black and Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, help, God help us, you know. So, you know, there's kind of an ideological bent to some of those cutbacks.
Now, going back to the July 1st article, what we're seeing, as you mentioned before, is a lot of resource extraction and a lot of profitability there. So in your opinion, what countries that could be compared to Canada have more, I guess, have a better, more positive economic outlook? Where could we look to for the direction of our economy?
Yeah, it's interesting in that when you look at the list of companies in Canada, they really are increasingly dominated by resource extraction, minerals, oil, natural gas, coal, things that, in essence, we dig out of the ground and then sell to other countries. Then those other countries take those resources that we've dug out, transform them into value-added high-tech products, and sell them back to us. So our pattern in international trade right now as a country is to export raw materials and import higher value products that have been made from those raw materials but made somewhere else. And the problem with that is obvious. You know, the price is much higher for the stuff that comes back because it's been transformed and the technology's been added. There's also, I think, tremendous risks for us as a country economically, but also environmentally and geopolitically, of positioning ourselves solely as a resource exporter. But the fact that our top 50 companies are dominated by resource producers now, there's hardly any manufacturing companies left on that list, that's a sign of how our economy has gone backwards in terms of our structural makeup. Now, there's other countries in the world that have no resources. So you think Canada's lucky, we've got all these resources, but there's other countries that have no resources but have done a very good job at developing value-added industries. You know, I think of a country like Korea, for example, today, a very small country, hardly any resources, yet they have a very dynamic, very successful, very export-oriented economic structure. The government works closely with banks and industries and even unions around a export strategy, and their products are increasingly high-tech, increasingly successful. So they've got a big trade surplus. Canada, despite the high-value resources in our ground, we've got a huge trade deficit. And there's even other countries that do have resources, but have been wise enough to not put all their eggs in the resource basket. You know, I think of a country like Norway, which has oil, or a country like Finland, which has minerals and forestry products. In both cases, they said, no, we're not going to become just an oil producer or a forestry producer. We want to have a value-added, diversified economic structure. They've kept their taxes very high, and then they've used the money from the taxes to actually stimulate different high-value industries, including very high-quality service industries and export industries, high-tech stuff like Nokia phones and so on. So it's, I think, a uniquely Canadian failure to take, you know, what seems like a windfall, the fact that we've got a big country with lots of resources on it, but then fail to make the most of that endowment in terms of stimulating a more diversified, more stable, and more valuable economic structure. Instead, we're relegating ourselves to digging stuff out of the ground. And sooner or later, the stuff will be gone, and we'll have nothing left to do.
I think the an important point you mentioned before, which is inextricably linked to our economy, is the environment. I think Canada has sort of suffered a bit of a fall from grace on the international scene because of the sort of total lack and almost a, how to say, trying to almost prevent environmental action from being taken on international level.
Yeah.
I think it's obviously linked to our economy and where, as you said, putting all our eggs in one basket, into the resource extraction basket, which, you know, we're cutting down forests, the tar sands, the biggest industrial projects anywhere in the world. How do you see any possibility of trying to bring these two things together to make the compromise between economic needs and clear environmental action that needs to be taken right away?
Mm-hmm. There's a very clear link between the changing structure of our economy, that this regression that I've talked about, where we're becoming more reliant on resource extraction and export. A connection between that trend and our declining record on environmental protection. The tar sands, of course, is the resource industry that is the most destructive environmentally. It's also the industry that's the most profitable economically. You know, there's very little risk in tar sands production. The mucky stuff is all right there under the trees in northern Alberta. There's no question of, you know, drilling a well and not finding oil. They know it's there. They have the technology, a very expensive, very destructive technology, but they can predictably process it and get the oil out of the tar. And the cost of that process can be anywhere around $40, $50, $60 a barrel of oil. But the price of oil is around $100 a barrel, and most people think it's going to go higher, not lower. So, you know, that's a sure profit of $40 a barrel on every barrel of the mucky stuff that you dig up. And the enormity of that incentive, the lure of those billion-dollar profits, explains why capitalism has arranged for hundreds of billions of dollars to be invested in that. It's a very clear example of how, in a free market, business-dominated economy, it's profit that determines what you do. Whether or not it's socially beneficial, whether or not it's environmentally destructive, if it's profitable, it will get done. And if it's really profitable, it will get done in a big way. So I think that the fact that so many of those biggest companies who are influential politically as well as economically, so many of them have so much at stake in the continued destruction of our environment in the tar sands and elsewhere, explains why the Harper government in particular has been so terrible, both at home and internationally, in trying to block any sort of meaningful environmental progress. So for us to overcome that is going to mean Canadians from coast to coast raising their voices and saying, you know, this is not what our country should be, and putting enough political pressure to, you know, limit Harper's leeway to undermine environmental policy, and then ultimately to get Harper's team out of office.
So if you were Harper's economic advisor right now, top three changes you would make?
Well, I actually studied economics with Stephen Harper at the University of Calgary back in the 1980s, believe it or not, but he hasn't asked me yet to join his team of advisors. If he did ask me for my advice, I guess the things that I would emphasize are, number one, slow down that resource juggernaut. We have to use the tools that we have, whether it's development approval processes or taxes and royalties, to slow down the expansion and eventually stabilize the amount of investment and production in the tar sands and other resource industries. Secondly, if we're going to develop value-added industries, both manufacturing and high-quality services, in the way that countries like Finland or Norway or Korea have. It takes a proactive effort to do that. You can't just sort of leave it to the market for these industries to develop. So we're going to need government to play a more active central role in developing other industries other than resources that provide high-value products and provide high-wage jobs. We've done this successfully in the past in Canada. Think of an industry like aerospace. Canada is a very successful aerospace producer, and that's a job that generates lots of income and spin-off benefits, but government was always a key player in making sure that aerospace was successful here. And we need to do the same thing in a whole range of other industries instead of, you know, just sort of cutting taxes and leaving it all up to business. The third change I would recommend is that we have to view investments in people as economic investments too, not just, you know, economic, not just investments in industry, but investments in people in terms of education, obviously, but also healthcare, well-being, investing in reducing poverty in Canada. These are all things that will allow Canadians to play a more productive, creative role in the economy, rather than, you know, just equipping us to go and do to serve coffee at Tim Hortons for our career. You know, often the people in a conservative mindset tend to view these things as a waste or a drain, and they look for ways to reduce this drain on the government's budget, how much money goes into social services or human services. In reality, it should be viewed as an investment that's as valuable as any other investment. So those are the three big things that I would do. Somehow, I don't think he would listen.